Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 336, recorded on July 29th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I've been missing you, Michael.
Yeah, I missed you too. I forgot what your voice sounded like.
Yeah, well, I could remember yours because I could go listen to the show.
That's true. Well, I could have listened to the show too and gotten your voice. So that was a missed opportunity. But Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah? Do you have fun at Pismo?
Just hanging out. Vacations, work, you know, podcasts, Nerdtaculars.
Like you do in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nerdtacular was awesome, as always.
Yeah?
Yep. Unfortunately, it was the last one in its current iteration, so we'll see what happens in future years.
I guess so. So, speaking of, I guess, sad things, Apple has officially discontinued the iPod Nano and iPod Shuffle.
Is it really sad? I'm trying to determine.
For some people, yes.
I know that, and I kind of get that, but, you know, it's like the writing was sort of on the wall, I believe, for a while.
The writing was on the wall, but I have a feeling there's a segment of the market that really liked the idea of having a lower cost music only device.
Super portable device. Absolutely.
I've seen
the
shuffles around.
The design hadn't changed since 2012.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last time they did a software update.
Yeah, they did a color refresh in 15, I think.
Oh right. Yep.
With the iPod Touch. When they did stuff with the iPod Touch, I guess.
I think they did the whole line. The Shuffles, the Nanos, and the...
Yeah, I do.
But I mean, there hasn't been a major design change in the Shuffle or the Nano, and I don't even think any major storage changes since... I'd have to go back, but I think since 2012.
I could see a greater argument for the Shuffle than the Nano, right?
Oh, here's the thing, though, right? We have a new Shuffle.
Oh, we do?
And Apple makes a lot more money off of it, and it's more appropriate for... at the gym where people like to use shuffles, and it's called an Apple Watch.
Oh,
yeah, but it costs so much more.
I know, from Apple's perspective, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I totally get the logic in that, and I'm sure Apple has had meetings where they've said, yeah, we already reinvented the Shuffle, and we put a watch band on it and a heart rate sensor.
And a screen and a billion other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it costs, you know, $150 more.
Well, the Shuffle costs, what, 50?
Oh, is it all the way down to 50? So $200 more.
Yeah, except for what most people will buy. So it'll be $300 more.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think Apple's selling a lot of those Series 1s.
You're talking about the 38?
Yeah. Series 1 38 would be $250.
That's right. That's what that sells for.
No, Series 2, 38 millimeter is $350.
Yeah. I highly recommend the Series 1, unless you need GPS.
It's a great deal, and I think you can get them even cheaper from retailers.
You can?
I think you can get, you know, $50 off that if you pay attention. And
I got mine for like $170 on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's a bummer, but, you know, they're cool, but they're gone, so that's fine. So goodbye, iPod Nano and Shuffle. Apple has put out some more betas since we last talked. The beta 4 came out on Monday, right? I believe it was Monday, and there are some tweaks going on still, which is good, and we're kind of expecting that to happen as the betas roll out. Lock screen tweaks, which seem to streamline the whole experience, such as you can, I guess, clear and view notifications from there. You can swipe to dismiss. There's actually a long, you know, all the way swipe. It'll take you right to the thing, or the other way will take you, will clear it away. And there's a new Touch ID interface for that. They changed the way that capacity is displayed on your phone, finally. So now it'll actually show you the capacity, the actual capacity of your phone. So now when you have a 128 gig, it's not going to show you, like, you know, 112 or whatever it does right now. It'll show you 128, which I think lessens some confusion because they don't print the capacity on the back of the phone anymore. So that's cool. And they tweaked some other random things. And you can actually now pull to refresh in the App Store for updates.
Which is nice.
That is nice for people who are crazy. They also seeded a third public beta of tvOS 11, which I think has auto light dark mode. And I guess the only important thing to me really is that you can now have your iCloud headphones in the Apple TV. So your AirPods will show up without having to do the weird pairing and going to settings and all that garbage.
Cool.
Yeah, that's honestly cool. That's the only reason I updated my Apple TV on the public beta. And it's very easy. Have you guys done this?
I haven't put my Apple TV on public beta. I just did my iPad Pro.
Yeah, so the way it works is you go to, I think it's beta.apple.com, sign into your whatever iCloud account you have signed in on your Apple TV, and then say, like, yes, I want to do it. And then when you go into settings, system, you will see, and then maybe software update. You'll see get public updates, public beta updates, and then you can get those updates super easily.
So everything happens over the air. I mean, that's how the installation on the iPad went as well. It was like you just visited the website, grabbed the profile, and then did a software update.
And for me, I found this interesting. I'm running developer beta on two iPads, and public beta is showing up as an option on my Apple TV, and I never went and did the thing on Apple's public beta site saying, hey, I want to do this.
You probably did. It's not specifically for Apple TV.
I don't think I've ever signed up for public beta anything.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Apple thinks you did. But that's how it works. Once you say that you like public betas of any iOS, then that's how it figures that out.
Oh, so, really? Maybe I need to look on my TV then and see, since I've signed up for public beta of iOS 11, I haven't even checked my Apple TV to see.
Yeah, it'll probably show up.
Maybe it's showing up because it's... will developer beta show up that way?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it's related to that since I'm running developer beta.
Let's see here. There is an interesting rumor that says that we may see an iPhone SE update. What was it? In August.
That's funny.
Yeah, you don't like that?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think at best there could be like a price drop.
Well, when are we going to get the iPhone SE with 7 guts?
Because that's what they're talking about. I wouldn't think before they release the iPhone
8,
7S, 7S Plus, and right. 8.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, you can talk about the fact that this may cannibalize sales of the iPhone 7, but I think the sales of iPhone 7s are pretty flat at this point.
Yeah, it's presumable they could, I guess they could do just a CPU update and a price drop and just, you know, have it quietly done. And there's not going to be an event. I think this rumor was like, oh, there's going to be an event and Apple's going to announce some new iPhone SE. And I just don't believe that's happening. And the rumor also mentioned a price drop. And the only part of that entire thing that I could see happening would be just a price drop so that Apple can sell more, get more people into the ecosystem.
Well, I don't think both of those would happen at the same time.
I think it'd just be a simple price drop ahead of the other one, again, to try and get more. It's probably more targeted at getting people who are interested in iPhone but have held off on switching because of cost or price or something like that.
Right. There are a lot of people who love this phone, though. It's a good phone.
It's an awesome phone. No, I'm not knocking it. And that's why it's a great one to get to try and draw people into the ecosystem with.
Yeah.
Because those people get in with that, and then the next time around when there's a major update, they go, oh, I really liked my SE. Maybe I'd like the more features of the 7S or the 7S Plus or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, I think a lot of people get the SE aware of the fact that the 7 is a possibility for them, but they want something smaller. They just want the smaller form factor.
True. Yep. That's another thing. I think it was, what's the CISP, Consumer Intelligence, Consumer Intelligence Research Partners, noted like in this last quarter that the number of people switching from Android was up higher than it had been for the past three quarters. So I think the past three quarters it's been ranging from 14% to 17%, and in this last quarter it was 20% of the people buying iPhones were coming from Android. So Apple's making headway, and that maybe they just want to further capitalize on that.
Yeah, I always think it's interesting when I see someone with like a Windows tablet and an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you really like your iPhone, but man, it would be so much nicer if you had, you know, an Apple computer, be it an iPad or what have you. You're missing out on so much integration.
And they say, well, I just didn't want to spend the money for an iPad, so I got the Windows iPad.
Yeah, the Windows one is an odd one. I often wonder about the Samsung scenario where someone has a Mac and then a Samsung phone, or has an iPhone and a Samsung tablet or whatever it might be. And almost inevitably when I talk to those people, they explain that they do all of their like cloud syncing stuff with Google. So in that realm, it doesn't really matter, right? Because the Mac integrates very well with everything Google, and Samsung integrates with everything Google. So it's kind of all handled.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let's see. So there's iPhone SE, iPhone 8 rumors. There's another many reports actually out claiming that the next iPhone... Oh, actually, all of the new iPhone models are potentially facing production delays. The iPhone 8, according to, what is this? Economic Daily News, they believe that it'll be delayed until November, December.
Mm-hmm.
And that there will be very small volumes this year. We won't get a ramp up until next year. And even they believe that the S phones are possibly facing delays. And this has been coming in quite a bit, these rumors of delays, although this is the latest one that we've heard. Ming-Chi Kuo believes that the production ramp up is going to be coming 1 to 2 months later than usual in the October-November timeframe. We've seen similar reports from Bloomberg, Barclays, and Brian White. And I kind of believe it. It seems like there's definitely a lot more... Way more rumors about this phone having issues.
Yep. It's looking bleak in terms of launch availability. I'm excited about the phone itself and the technology and everything that Apple's putting together, but on the launch availability, it's going to be rough out there.
It's going to be very AirPod-like.
What?
Very AirPod-like.
I think it's going to be twice as worse.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. So, is the...
It's bad, I guess. Twice as worse. So
is this all about displays?
No, it's about... I mean...
Yeah, we're not sure,
I was
going to
say, we're better off talking about which components aren't part of the problem.
Right. So the,
because it would be a shorter list.
Yeah. So I think displays is one concern. We're also concerned about the Touch ID modules. There have been reports. So Apple is leasing equipment.
Right.
One of the three flexible PCB suppliers backed out of being a supplier for whatever reason.
Motherboards.
So Apple is leasing equipment to the other two in order to maintain the production level, which is like what, tens of millions of dollars or something for this equipment.
3D image sensors have been rumored to be having issues.
Okay, there's that.
Yeah, I think the camera system's okay. Like just the regular like camera sensors, I think are fine. And I think the you know like the power button on the side seems to be okay.
Oh, the thing that's just a button.
Yeah, okay. And I think the enclosures are okay. I think the front and back cases in the frame are fine.
No aluminum shortages to deal with right now.
Oh, sometimes it's the little victories that keep you going.
Maybe not even surprisingly not bad. I don't think batteries are a problem either.
Yeah, it seems like there's a glut of battery right now. But there have also been rumors that even the front-facing 3D sensor software may be temporarily disabled at launch just because they can't get the software to be finalized yet.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be that. I mean, there's precedent for that, right? Because that's what they did with the 7 Pluses, like,
with the camera
mode. Bokeh mode or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Right.
Bokeh. Portrait.
Right.
So that's what Apple called it.
That's like what it's called.
Portrait mode.
So we've seen that rumor. This is from another one from Mako Takara. They believe it won't ship until October or November. May only be available in black is what they think.
As Henry Ford said, you can have it in any color you want.
Yeah, as long as it's black. Mm-hmm. I guess there were some rumors of the sleep-wake button incorporating Touch ID, but they do not believe that is going to be the case. They still believe that, well, they actually think that the screen side Touch ID is now unlikely. Which
it's going to be integrated in the display. I think that's it.
Yeah.
The latest rumors seem to be indicating that Apple's decided to tough it out and figure that out. But unfortunately, that's just compounding this delay problem.
Well, I'm glad for that. Honestly, I would take the delay over no Touch ID because I really like Touch ID. Although Mako Takara believes that they would be moving to facial recognition instead. That's what they're thinking.
I'm having a hard time with that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I know if anyone's going to get it right, it's going to be Apple. Yet, there just seem to be so many hurdles, technical hurdles, that Apple would have to overcome to replace something that's already working so well for so many people.
Not right. to mention, they would have had to have given developers a heads up at Worldwide Developer Conference.
Right, and that didn't happen.
You think so?
Think of how many apps you have that integrate Touch ID.
Well, you could probably use the same API, potentially.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if they handle the communication, I guess, in a way. But, I mean, I don't know. It seems like there would be some indication somewhere, you know, that Steve Trotten Smith would have already uncovered, like, hints.
This is true. Yeah, he would have uncovered those hints.
No, we haven't seen that, so... I'm with Jeff. I think there's too much marketing and there's too many technologies that are integrated and integral to Touch ID. And I just don't see the whole Apple Pay experience working with a facial recognition system. I just can't even fathom how that works with how you have to, you know, readers are positioned at retailers, you know, taking out your phone and positioning it in all kinds of weird ways.
Yeah, it's already kind of irritating with the Apple Watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But. So, you know, how's it going to read my face if my phone's, you know, pointed mostly down at the counter or something like that?
Well, you know, we had these similar discussions when we were talking about FaceTime. Like, oh, they're not going to put a camera on the front. We're going to get a bunch of nose shots.
And you do.
Yes,
yeah,
you do.
But... unless you hold it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, think about how Apple Pay works if you're using your phone. I mostly use my watch now, so it really wouldn't impact me too much. But when I do use my phone, you know, sometimes the reader's kind of sideways. Sometimes it's at all kinds of different angles. So, and the idea of, oh, well, you've got to take your phone out, then hold it to your face, then hold it down to the reader, while not a big deal, it lessens the experience.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to be able to just like take my phone out of my pocket and put it over the reader.
Yeah. And that, that really is a seamless experience. You don't have to do anything. You just hold it and you have your thumb on the thing and then it just works.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff's mentioned this, and I know he does this, and I do this myself too. And also when I'm reaching in my pocket, I know I'm using Apple Pay. I find the home button and I put my thumb right on it as I'm taking it out of my pocket. Like by the time it hits the reader, it's already unlocked and ready to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
One interesting thing, so there's the iPhone 8 SIM tool packaging from SlashLeaks. It appears that has leaked. So it's just kind of, it would be where the little ejector tool, the card it would be attached to. And it shows kind of what we're expecting for the iPhone 8 as far as the approximately whole front of the phone being covered with a screen, except for the earpiece. And I guess the reason this is interesting to me is if they only produced black iPhones 8, I don't know that they would really indicate that there's a difference between those two regions, right? Because if it was black, it wouldn't look any different.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
So why would Apple call that out?
Maybe it's to differentiate this phone from all the other models.
But how would... I mean, I don't know that you would notice it.
Is this that leaked image of the card?
Yes.
Supposedly in the box?
Or it could just be BS.
The only thing that got me excited about that is, does that mean I get a SIM ejector tool in my box now? Or are they still only giving those to people in Europe?
That's what I was thinking. It may just be Europe.
We never get the SIM ejector tool. It pisses me off.
But yeah, that's just lame.
Even the lame bent paperclip one, they don't give us.
Yeah, I have so many of those.
Where did you get them, though?
Lots of original iPhone replacements.
Gotcha.
Oh, of course.
And I have one of the liquid metal SIM ejector tools.
I had one of those at one point. I have no idea where it is. It's probably in the box in the garage, in the original packaging.
Those are fascinating. That material is very cool.
I'm wondering if I have old iPhone boxes sitting around. I should go look for SIM eject tools.
So the picture, I think they only included it in like one or two models again in the States. In Europe, I think they include them all the time because, you know, you weren't typically on contract or whatever. So they pop SIMs in and out all the time. So and I don't know about China and Australia and other areas, probably the same thing. I think we're the only ones who don't get the ejector tools.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been slumming it. I have a paper clip that I bent. Yeah. I just keep handy.
The bent paper clip. Which really the ejector tool is just a fancy bent paper clip at this point.
Yeah, so. This is true. Let's see here. So Apple is reportedly working with a particular Chinese manufacturer of electric batteries. And why this is interesting is, so they're a lithium ion battery supplier, and they are a spin-off of a current iPhone battery supplier. So they don't supply batteries for iPhones as far as I can tell. And it seems like they specialize in EV batteries. They claim to be the third largest supplier of EV batteries. This is CATL, Contemporary...
EV is electric vehicle, right?
Yes. Contemporary Amperex Technology Limited. They were a spinoff of Amperex Technology Limited in 2011. Yeah, they say that they're the third largest supplier of electric vehicle batteries. And that's kind of what they're trying to specialize in. They're they're planning to continue improving EV batteries, and Apple is reportedly working with them, according to what was this? Shanghai-based something global.
Car as a service, people. Car as a service. I'm telling you.
Car as a service. Cars are becoming a service already.
There was an article. I linked to it in my show notes. I can't remember if it was The Verge or The Next Web or something like that. Intel came out with a study, and they predict that what they call it, the passenger economy. So everything around not sort of driving your own car, but being a passenger either in autonomous vehicles or using ride sharing services or using, you know, you have your own car and you share it out, whatever it might be, whatever these things might be in the future, that by 2050, they're predicting that to be a $7 trillion economy.
2050, that's wow. So long from now.
And also so soon. But I mean, when you look at the heavily entrenched thing with everyone owning their own cars, especially in the United States.
Right.
That's pretty fast.
Yep. It's and I was more impressed. It's more the price. So $7 trillion by 2050, but that means it's going to be in the hundreds of billions very soon. Right? That's going to be a huge economy. And the point of the article, and this is what really got me with respect to Apple, is that you have to start rethinking transportation, and now transportation really becomes not about the utility, not about the job of getting yourself from one place to another. It becomes about the experience that you have moving from place to place.
Which I would like to be sleeping, please. Sleeping or eating.
Well, we should talk about the bus, but that's going to be aside. The point I want to make here is that Apple is so much about being an experience company and creating a seamless experience of, I have my devices at home and I have my devices that I take with me mobily. Now they can bridge the gap if they build, again, passenger kinds of services. You now have a seamless experience, and it extends to a number of areas of Apple's business, right? So we're talking about, you have your iPhone and your devices that you're going to be using to call up cars and manage where cars are and interact with the service itself when you're mobile. You're going to have your entertainment that you're going to want to do while you're either at home or in the vehicle or outside, you know, away. So you want that to be seamless. So you're talking about, you know, things like Apple Music and whatever movie services they want, and all of that being integrated into the vehicle system and moving along with you. I mean, it goes on and on. Augmented reality displays that you might want to call up while you're in the vehicle, so you're riding along and it can be pointing out points of interest and giving you information as like heads up, augmented reality displays or directions or traffic alerts or whatever that stuff might be. I mean, it's massive how many touch points Apple could potentially integrate into something like this. And, you know, sort of where they fall in the spectrum and what they do, I think, is still in limbo. But I think these are all the kinds of things that they're thinking about. So when they're saying we're looking at autonomous systems, these are the kinds of things that I think they're tapping into. And I think they're tapping into them because of the monetary potential in the future. And I think the Intel number just sort of points that out. Mm. I mean, this is why they're doing it. So if people ask, why is Apple even messing with this stuff? It's because this is looking to be the next sort of big revolution in these technologies sort of changing how we live and changing our experience of just kind of being on the planet. And Apple is really into that stuff. Like they get jazzed about it.
Yeah. I buy it.
Yeah, this fits nicely with Apple's or the notion that Apple is looking to diversify where the revenue comes from, so that when the iPhone isn't the next huge thing anymore, there's already other next huge things in place. Yep. So we've got the whole car thing. We've got the health thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Totally. So, and this is a big one. I mean, and, you know, they want to be in it and they want to be ahead of the curve. And I think they're doing it.
Yeah. It's pretty far off on the horizon, though, at this point. It's not two years from now.
I could see them rolling out in an autonomous vehicle service in a place like China through like their partner Didi Chung in the next 10 years.
Yeah, that sounds likely. Yeah. 10 years, not two.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. I think the last thing I have on my list is it appears Apple is getting ready for 4K and HDR in iTunes. So they've begun.
I totally cut you off.
Yeah.
Finish talking. Yeah, and then if I still need to ask my question, I will.
Yeah. Okay. So customers have noticed in iTunes certain movies being listed as a movie with 4K and HDR, although it seems to be limited to certain regions at this point and limited to certain movies. But nonetheless, this lines up pretty well with a report from Bloomberg in February in which they talked about Apple working on a fifth generation Apple TV with 4K and broader color range support.
The question I have about this is, wasn't there rumors, or haven't people looked into the current hardware and said that it's capable of actually doing 4K?
From what
I don't know about HDR, but at least 4K.
Yeah, from what I recall, it has the hardware to do 4K, but the way Apple put it together, you can't do a software update to make it do 4K. You have to replace it.
Okay.
But still, I mean, you have a USB-C port on this thing, so you could do something where you have an add-on module through USB-C.
That ain't happening.
Yeah, they're not going to do that though. Apple would just put out a new box. I had thought that, like you said, I had heard the hardware was there, but it makes sense that it's not put together in a way that would support that. And really, we've had the current model for long enough now that I think if people had to pay another $150 or whatever it is to get a new box, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
And it's probably time.
Maybe. I don't know. I still have my TV from 2007.
I won't be upgrading. I don't have a 4K TV, and I'm not looking at buying one anytime soon.
Yeah, I have a 720p TV.
I watch my TV, my actual TV, so infrequently compared to just using my iPad.
Hmm.
That it's going to be very hard to justify, you know, dropping $1,500, even $1,000 on a new TV set.
Yeah, I'm rocking a 32-inch 1080p Sony television that's, what, like 10 years old?
Yep.
Maybe even a little older now. And it's an amazing television. I have no intention of replacing this until the day it literally dies, at which point I'll probably just cry and be without a TV for a little while because...
Just find another one of those.
Actually, I have considered looking around and seeing if I can find one,
just a backup.
Buying it and putting it in the closet so that I've got it. When this one dies, I just unplug the one, stick the other one in.
I feel that.
Yeah. The TV industry they're in a weird dilemma because maybe they're okay that I think there's a small percentage of people that get really jazzed about this stuff, John Marvolaro. And then I think there's a growing and growing percentage of people that are moving to their mobile devices and their tablets for most of their entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is just a weird thing. I mean, and those two sides of the spectrum are very far apart. Like, you're never going to get a video file or somebody who's really into this stuff to want to use a tablet. And for the people who use tablets, they are the type, I think, that really don't care too much about if it's 4K or 5K or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. All right, so that is all I have. So let's move on to picks, and I'm going to call on Jeff first for an iPhone pick.
Okay, my iPhone pick is an app, and it's called Solar Eclipse Timer.
Ooh.
It's my pick because the total solar eclipse that's going to cross diagonally over the United States on August 21st, that's coming up soonish. So I found this app. It's a couple dollars. As I recall,
what's
iPhone and iPad compatible, and it will give you all the info you need about the eclipse based on where you are. Or you can give it a location, and it'll give you the details for that. So so I've actually got a countdown timer running in the app right now, telling me what when the eclipse will be happening, like down to the second, where I am today. And it alerts me that I'm not going to have a total eclipse in Boulder. But that's okay because I've already figured out where in Wyoming to go. And so we're doing a road trip and camping to watch the eclipse.
Cool.
Yeah. And I bought this app a little while ago, so I think it's $2.
It is. So what's the developer? Is it Gordon Telepin? It's a orange face over the
eclipse. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's $2.
Yeah. It's an awesome little app.
Cool. So Eclipse Timer, it is $1.99. So Adam,
yes, sir.
What's your pick?
I'm actually going to pick a little game that I ran across, and I think I want to say I found this in like a featured indie. I was just browsing through the App Store one day trying to find something new and something that looked interesting. And I think it was in the indie best indie games section or something like that, if I'm remembering correctly, but I could be getting that wrong. And it's an app called Warp Shift. And what really drew me to it was the screenshots and the artwork. And I downloaded it, and it was kind of amazing. It's a simple little puzzle game. You play this girl, and she kind of has a little pet. I'm almost going to call it, it's like the bit from Tron or something like that.
It looks like the cube that had the Infinity Stone in it.
Right. And it starts out pretty simple and gets more and more complex. But the basic idea is that you're presented with a grid of little boxes, and the girl will be in one box, and then a portal that you're trying to get to will be in another box. And you take a box, one box at a time, and you sort of drag it left, right, up, or down, and then the boxes reconfigure. And so some boxes will have doors on some sides and walls on others, and basically you're trying to line up the boxes in a way that you can get to the little portal. So that's the basic concept, and when you get through the portal, you get through the level. And it's one of these that there are multiple solutions. You have a certain number of moves, and if you can do it in the least number of moves, you score 3 stars for the level and then all the way down to 1 star. So you're trying to get kind of the best solution that you possibly can for each level. And there's something like, I want to say there's something like 250 levels.
Wow.
Yeah. And I believe this thing was free.
Oh, yeah, it has in-app purchases, maybe.
Yeah, and I think the in-app purchases for maybe ad removal. I don't even remember. I'm trying to think if I've even seen an ad. There might be ads. But it's just really enjoyable kind of little puzzler game with really beautiful graphics. And then, like I said, at some point you get to these doors that are not just doors. They're kind of these force field portals, and the two of those kinds of doors need to be lined up to open up. And then at a higher level, they add the little bit guy, and you have to get to the bit in order to throw him to another cube to unlock the portal. And that, you know, so it just gets, they continue to add more and more puzzles. So there's 5 worlds of 15 levels each that you're trying to get through, and you're trying to traverse up this sort of these levels. to kind of get to the top level. There may be an in-app purchase for like add-on levels or something like that.
It's all solutions. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's the solutions that you pay for. And I haven't had to pay for any of the solutions. I think you get three for free. So you don't actually have to buy anything if you don't want. But if you want to buy a solution pack just to support the developer because you like the game, which I might actually do because it's actually it's just amazingly well designed. The art style looks great. It's all 3D. So I'm assuming it's all like OpenGL or something like that. And the animations are excellent and good little game.
I don't know how
I ran across it, and I had never heard of it before. So
why are they not requesting money? Why are they not selling this? There are so many games that are so good, they look good, they play well.
Yeah, I would have paid $5 for this easily.
They need to charge money for these things. This is craziness. They can't possibly be making money off of this. The development time and work and effort and probably developers that they needed to hire for this, they can't possibly be net positive on this thing.
Fish Labs is involved with it, and I know like they do a crud ton of games, I think, right?
Still. I don't know.
So I think it's sort of the kind of thing where you make it up in volume. I have no idea. But okay. I mean, it's excellent. Right.
Check it out.
Very well done. So check it out. Warp Shift.
Warp Shift.
Already downloaded.
Okay. So my pick this week is tangentially related to iPhones. I need to find a new place to live. And everybody knows that sucks, especially in places where housing is competitive. And there is a guy who a few years ago wrote a solution. What does it say? Okay, 2016. He was looking for a place in San Francisco and he was using Craigslist for this, but Craigslist is a pain in the butt and they don't let people in to their APIs for things like PadMapper. So he used a Python scraper to pull the raw data from Craigslist and then do a bunch of massaging on the data to filter out only the results that make sense for him. So he has a bunch of little cool things in here, such as, so the boxes feature allows you to, you draw boxes around, you know, arbitrarily around neighborhoods that are interesting to you. So there are a bunch of neighborhoods in San Francisco that I'm not familiar with, but he wanted to call those neighborhoods out. You know, so you can draw the boxes arbitrarily for wherever you're looking. So that way you can tag that on with your results that you get back. And part of this thing, so it runs every 20 minutes. It'll pull new stuff every 20 minutes and then post it into Slack. So, which is good for, you know, if you're looking for a place with somebody else or a group of people, which I am tentatively doing, so we can comment on the things we like and, you know, add emojis and stuff. But it's also, I mean, actually Slack is a really good spot to put all of that and track what you have done and who you've contacted and extra information, even if you're looking for yourself. One of my favorite things is you can filter by location. So he set it up again in the context of San Francisco. So he said, these are the BART stations I want to be close to and filter out every other place. So you basically just add a pin. So you go to Google Maps, you figure out what the coordinates are, throw that in there, and it will only return results where it is, you know, within 2 kilometers of a BART station. And I actually modified this. So there, it's all Python. It's pretty easy to deal with. I modified it so that I get results in the form, it'll only show me stuff where the price per room is a certain maximum, which is something that Craigslist does not do. So if you're looking, if you're like, you know, I've got a couple friends who are thinking about going in on a house with me, they're like, well, you know, we can only afford X per room. And that way you can, this makes it super simple. So there's a lot of potential here. It's built on several APIs. There's a Python Craigslist API that it, or I should say it's a module or a library in addition to a couple other things. But it is pretty simple to set up. You do have to run it yourself. You have to download all this stuff and spin it up yourself. But once you get it going, it's like magic. I feel like I gave birth to a being that looks at Craigslist for me all day. So I don't have to worry about that. So I just wait for my Craig robot to let me know that there's something that meets all my criteria And a lot of times it's faster than the Craigslist search emails, because, you know, Craigslist will do that. And I do have it set up just kind of as a sanity check to see that I'm still getting results that make sense. But I'm, of course, getting stuff that's too far via that, because the way that Craigslist does that is kind of irritating. But yeah, it's great. So I will be putting a link in the show notes, but the article is on DataQuest, and it's how I built a Slack robot to help find an apartment in San Francisco. So it's very cool. You can do a lot of things. I would recommend, if you're interested at all in automating Craigslist searching, it's a really good article to check out. The code base is, you'll learn a lot from it. And the included Craigslist Python library is useful for not just housing. So check that out. And it's all free, open source. So with that, you can find all of our picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes. Rate the show. Tell a friend. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback about the show. Send it to that address. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thanks for being here again, Adam. It's good to talk to you after all this time.
Glad we're back doing this. It's been a while.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, the TMO Daily Observations podcast. That's still going on, right?
Yep, every single day.
Awesome. And he's at Jay Gamet on Twitter as well. Thanks for being here as well, Jeff.
I'm so glad we're all back. It's fun.
It's a party in our rooms.
It's totally a party in our rooms.
Yeah. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?